Blog Talk Radio.
Are you ready for the truth? The whole truth and nothing but the truth? It's time now for Chandler Unleashed.
Folks, here we are on April 6, 2020, 6 p.m., second episode of Chandler Unleashed. Managed to not get banned last week by Blog Talk Radio. And here we are in the midst of coronavirus, and we're going to take a little break from it, kind of take a breather. We've got everybody's anxious, everybody's concerned. We're going to take a breather and back off, and we're going to talk a little bit with one of the best attorneys that does family practice. She does criminal defense. She does a little bit of everything. I'm going to bring her on here. Let me see if I can get my ducks in a row and bring her on. Let's see if we can get Miss Campbell on. Teresa, are you there, pal?
I'm here.
All right. Folks, this is Teresa Brewer Campbell. She is down from the Lawrenceburg area. She has always been a good friend of mine since the day I first met her, and she is tremendous. Teresa, tell the folks a little bit about what you do in your practice, where you're located, what your counties of practice are. Tell them a little bit about yourself.
Well, my name's Teresa Brewer Campbell, and I have been practicing law a very short time. I went to law school after my two children went to college. So I'm an older attorney, and I practice mainly in Lawrence County, but I also practice the Ho District. And as a matter of fact, I've practiced in 15 different counties in Tennessee so far. And my main area is juvenile and criminal law. I do a few other things, but I try not to because I'm certainly not the best. I am, but I do like criminal law, and I do like juvenile law. And I do some divorces and some adoptions.
Well, I want to say this, Teresa. Somebody that is adopted or was adopted, I would just want to thank you for that work. And, you know, it's always amazing to see you and David Allen, one of the best legal minds in the whole state, sitting there with a family with smiles on their faces when you know that child has been given basically a new lease on life. They've been given a family that loves them. And I think if we look at the problems in the world today, kids not getting enough love as kids is a whole lot of the source of that problem, is that kids aren't given the opportunity to grow up in a loving home. And as somebody that has kids and was adopted, I just want to tell you thank you for what you do, and it doesn't go unnoticed. There are plenty of people out there who sing the praises of Teresa Brewer Campbell all the time.
Well, thank you. And that is my favorite practice, is adoptions. And you're totally right. There's so many kids that don't get that love and affection. And these adoptive parents are always my heroes.
Well, speaking of heroes, let's talk about somebody that should be a hero, and that is your local district attorney. Emphasis on should be. Whatever district you live in, Teresa and I happen to live in the 22nd Judicial District, but we're going to talk a little bit today about something called prosecutorial discretion. When you look it up under the Tennessee Code 87103, it says, it kind of lists the duties of the district attorney, and then it says that the district attorney under Part 6 shall have discretion in the performance of duties and responsibilities and in the allocation of resources available to such a district attorney generals. Basically, that means the district attorney can decide who he wants to prosecute and who he doesn't want to. Before we get into why that becomes a problem, Teresa, as an attorney, can you kind of walk us through let's say today I get arrested, and what is that process like from the police officer stops me and I'm arrested? Let's say I'm arrested for simple possession. What is that process like in the legal world? Like, what are the steps that you see?
Okay, normally, and, you know, every case is different, so I can't say this is exactly what happens because every case is handled somewhat different by each different district or maybe even each different police officer. But normally, you get an arrest on a simple possession. They pull you over, you're driving, they see, you know, marijuana sitting in your car seat, say. Most officers are going to arrest you right there. Now, there have been a couple of times I've seen citations, which means they just give you like a ticket and you come in and you go through the process, but you're not arrested right there on the spot. Okay, just saying that. You get arrested. You go to jail. You can be bonded out if you have enough money. A lot of times, that's only like $1,000, maybe $2,000. But if it's been several times, they might even up that. But your bond could be anywhere from $1,000, $10,000, say. And you get bonded out, or maybe you don't. Maybe you don't have enough money to get bonded, or you don't have family members that will help you. You're sitting in jail, and the judge is supposed to see you within a certain amount of time, and you're usually brought up for a bond hearing. And if you can't make bond, the judge tries to help you out in lowering that bond so that you might possibly get out of jail. All right.
Well, let me ask you this while we're talking about bond. Let me ask you this real quick. So bond is not supposed to be a punishment, correct?
No.
I mean, bond is – what is the purpose of bond?
Well, it's twofold. One is to make sure that you appear for court when your court date is approaching. You need to be in court. The second reason, it is a deterrent, or like if you're a really bad hombre, say, and you really need to be in jail and to protect society. So it might be used as a, you know, you don't want a lot of murderers on the street, so you might set that bond very high as a deterrent to getting you out of jail. So it's a twofold. It's a two-pronged, but it's not as a punishment, no.
Right. All right, so bond is set, and then the next step.
Then you have a hearing.
Let's say you bond out.
Okay, and you bond out. You get a court date, and they'll let you, your bondsman will let you know what the court date is. And usually, not all the time, you go first to General Sessions Court. They can only handle misdemeanors. But, you know, as a felon, if you have a felony possession, say you have a great huge amount of it, it probably wouldn't be simple possession. But anyway, you are then, you get a hearing, or you can, and what is called a probable cause hearing. A lot of us just call it a preliminary hearing, but it's really whether or not you should have been arrested and was there enough probable cause to bind your case over to the grand jury. So the first step is going to General Sessions Court. And after you've gotten out, and you either have a hearing or you can settle the case or they can dismiss it. That rarely happens, but it does happen occasionally. And then the next step would be after you have a hearing, which most attorneys do have hearings, well, I can't say most. Some attorneys have a lot of hearings. Then the judge can decide whether or not there was probable cause to believe that you may or may have committed the crime. Then they can bind that over to the grand jury. Now, when you go to a grand jury, it is only a one-sided story. Only the prosecution or the prosecuting officer will go into the grand jury and tell his side of the story. You don't get the other side of the story. You don't have the defense person there. You don't have an attorney representing you in the grand jury. It's just the police officer usually. And at that time, if they find probable cause, they can have you indicted. And that means you will get an indictment and you will have to appear in court for circuit court.
Well, and let me
now,
say this,
circuit.
You know, there's an old saying that anybody can get a ham sandwich indicted. You just have to go in there and tell a good story.
And basically that's true.
Any proof, right? You're not putting on any real evidence. You're just saying, here's what happened, and this is my story. This is what I believe happened. And then you've got to convince those people that that's what happened. And there's no, like you said, there's no counterpoint to that. So you could go in and say, oh, my God, Chandler broke into my house and broke all this furniture and threw things around. And all of a sudden, these people who don't know Chandler or see Chandler, they say, well, shoot, sounds like he's a terrible person. We should indict him. He needs to be in front of a judge.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's what happens. I mean, you know, they tell their story. And yeah, and there are some very good grand juries. And they pay attention. I mean, there's some cases that they do not. It has to be all 12 or 13. Anyway, it has to be every member of the grand jury has to agree to indict that person. So if one person on that grand jury says, no, I just don't think there's enough evidence, then that person does not get indicted on that particular case. So it's kind of a good balancing act in the grand jury that if, you know, if one person's not convinced, you're not going to be indicted.
Well, good. So let's say they do indict.
That's a good thing.
Yeah, that is good.
Okay,
let's say they do indict.
Okay. Then from there, it goes to circuit court, and you have judges like in our district, like Judge Allen, Judge Parks, Judge Hargrove, and Judge Sockwell. So we have fabulous judges in our district. We're real lucky that we have who we have. We are just very lucky. So at that point, it goes in front of the judge, and usually we have four judges and we have four counties. So they do a rotation, and so for a year they may be in Murray County, and a year they'll be in Lawrence County, and then the next year they may be in Giles, and then the next in Wayne County. So it's a, you know, it's a rotation, and we get the privilege of having each and every one of those judges in our district at some time on criminal matters. Now, they're also here on civil, but we're not talking about civil. So anyway, once they're indicted, they come up. You have to go to court, and you are arraigned. You will either plead guilty or not guilty at that point. You can have your indictment read to you, or you can waive it. And then usually there is going to be a plea offer within 2 or 3 months. And when there's a plea offer, you can accept it or you cannot accept it. And if you don't accept it, then you can go to trial, and you can have a jury of your peers.
Now, a plea offer is basically an offer that's being set forth from the district attorney's office to say, hey, here's your deal, as people call it, right?
Right, correct. And so they're
okay,
the ones
so
that get to make
let's
the
say
deal.
I reject it. Yeah, let's say I say, look, I didn't do anything. I'm not taking your deal. Then what happens?
Well, at that point, as soon as you get to circuit, you know, normally we request a discovery. You're not given discovery back in general sessions court. You know, they just don't tell you what all they got in their pocket or, you know, what all the evidence is. So, but once you get to circuit, the prosecution has to share what they know about your client. And so they give you the evidence and you review it with your client. And, sometimes you'll say, look, the evidence is overwhelmingly against you. You're not going to win in a trial. You know, you might want to think about the plea. You may want to accept it or not. And a lot of times it might be a good offer and they still don't want to accept it. Or it could be a bad offer and they might want to accept it just because they went out of jail. You know, I've had it both ways. So, a lot of people accept pleas, even when they're innocent, just to get out of jail. If they've been in jail for 6 months, and sometimes by the time it gets to circuit, that's how long they've been in jail.
Well, and the other thing, and I want to speak specifically about three people, the gentleman that was the road superintendent in Wayne County, and Jimmy Brown, the former sheriff of Lawrence County, and Adam Brewer, the former chief deputy of Lawrence County. or chief detective, I should say, of Lawrence County. Those guys, just because you accept a plea, because I think sometimes the media and especially social media get this wrong. You might accept a plea because you've spent all your money on attorneys. You might accept a plea because you're just exhausted with the idea that you've got to go back to court. You know you didn't do anything, but you might accept this plea to make the nightmare end. Because if anybody's ever been arrested, you know, it's a nightmare. It totally disrupts your entire life. Your finances are, you know, pouring out the window, depending on, you know, what your attorney charges and how much work there is to be done. You may be hemorrhaging money. And if they give you some deal where, okay, you can't get in trouble for a year and then this goes off your record, well, then that's a pretty sweet deal, because then in a year, because you know you didn't do anything, in a year, it's like it never happened. And so when people, when, you know, I'll never forget when Adam Brewer accepted his plea or his deal, you know, people were railing on him. See, I knew it. Adam didn't do anything wrong, but Adam's got a family. You know, Jimmy is 70, 80 years old. He doesn't want to spend the twilight of his life fighting in court. And the Wayne County fellow basically said, look, what they offered me to pay back for fixing a bridge so an ambulance could get to a cancer patient, by the way, is less than what I'm going to spend fighting this. So I'd be dumb not to take it. So I just want our listeners to know, just because somebody accepts a plea does not mean they did it. It may mean they're tired of fighting.
I totally agree, and I have a lot of clients like that. They decide it's not worth it to continue the fight. Let's just plead guilty, even if I'm not guilty. I don't have the money. I don't have the resources. I don't really have the proof to prove I'm innocent. You know, and so, yeah, a lot of innocent people do plead because they don't have enough money to continue the fight.
And, you know, that's what's really scary is, you know, we're sitting here in the middle of this COVID stuff, and we're really finding out people who have savings and reserves and who don't, because destroying a lot of people's family, it's destroying a lot of people's economic security. You know, thankfully, it's not around the time that, you know, we have Christmas and things like that, where it really means a lot to kids to get gifts. You know, we have Easter coming up, but, you know, you really can't do an Easter egg hunt and everybody stay 6 feet apart. But, you know, thankfully, if it's going to happen, it happened at a good time. But, I mean, just think about how devastating going through this around Christmas time would be for somebody that didn't do anything.
Right. It would be awful.
And, so and you know, the trial, that's where we get to go in front of our peers, right? You get a jury, right?
Exactly. You get a jury. And before that, you have a few motions in front of the judge, and you know, you go back and forth and you have different things that may come up. But at the bottom line, you get to go in front of a jury of your peers. And, you know, I have never had a trial anywhere other than Lawrence County, but Lawrence County people are extremely smart, and they pay attention. And I would say that in nearly every case I've ever seen, they've always made the right, not always, but most nearly every time, made the right choice in a jury trial.
Well, and, you know, I think that's to keep a system of checks and balances. You know, our whole government is predicated on the idea that, you know, the judiciary will keep the executive branch in check, and the executive branch will keep the legislative branch in check, and, you know, vice versa. I mean, you can't, you know, it's woefully bad for one branch or one person or one department to have this unrestricted power. When you have one person that's able to make decisions without asking anybody or running things by anyone, that really is a bad system. You know, so thank goodness we have checks and balances like the jury system, where let's say you're accused of something you didn't do, you get to go in front of the people in your community most of the time who may know you and who may at least have heard of you, and they're the same kind of folks, usually with the same kind of values as you have.
True. And you know, it is the best system in the world, and we have the best. And juries do a remarkable job. They really do. And it's a great check and balance.
So let's say we have a jury trial. They find you guilty. What do you do then?
Well, at that point, you have in 30 days, within 30 days normally, the judge will set a sentencing hearing. And then you will be sentenced, whatever that may be, whether it's sometimes probation, but usually it's sometime in jail. And at that time, you can request a new trial. And you have to put in the request for a new trial all the things that happened that were incorrect or wrong in the jury. In the trial, not jury, in the trial. And so then from there, the judge denies you a new trial. And I don't think I've ever seen anybody get a new trial on that level. Then you get to request an appeal from the criminal appeals part of our government. And it will go up to them in Nashville because we're in the middle Tennessee district. And so then they can hear your case. Now, you can also do, if you think your attorney was just terrible and horrible, you can do what is called a post-conviction relief. But normally, you know, you'll want to do the appeal first. So there's two options, the post-conviction relief, which is asking for relief after you've been convicted, and there's also the appeal part. And if you don't like what the appeals court says, then you can also go to the Supreme Court of Tennessee. If you don't like what the Supreme Court of Tennessee says, you can take it to the, even further. So, you know, you have some options, and that's what's so great about our system. You have more options than just a trial. After all it's said and done, you can still ask for a new trial. You can have an appeals. You can have post-conviction relief. There's a lot of things that can happen.
Well, I know that's a lot to go through, and I appreciate you kind of walking people through the steps, because some people, and most people, may have never been arrested, may have never had a trial, may have never experienced what really goes on in the courtroom. So when we talk about a charge, you have people on your side who are the defense, and then the people that represent the state of Tennessee are the district attorney's office. And then there's the DA, which in our district, that is Brent Cooper. And then he has assistant district attorneys, ADAs, that kind of help him, people in this 22nd Judicial District, which covers Murray, Giles, Lawrence, Wayne, those four counties. So the whole purpose of the district attorney is to enforce the laws of the state of Tennessee, or prosecute people who are believed to have broken those laws, I should say. Is that a fair statement?
I'd say so, yes.
So, you know, our system is predicated on people being treated equitably. It shouldn't matter who you are, shouldn't matter what race you are, shouldn't matter how much money you have in the bank. If you commit a crime, you should at least be brought to court. If somebody breaks into my house and steals my things that I work hard for, I am going to want to have that person prosecuted. And I'm going to expect district attorney that we elected represent my best interest there, because that's what he's paid to do. And all of us deserve justice. There's an old TV show, Justice Is Your Right, and we demand it. Or I guess that's a commercial. That's a Bart Durham commercial. But oftentimes, that isn't the case because of something called prosecutorial discretion. And you look it up online, folks. We got a lot of listeners here today. It's really good that people are tuning in. prosecutorial discretion, I'll read you the textbook definition, and I'll just kind of tell you what I think it is. Teresa, tell me if I'm wrong. It says the authority that an officer or an agency has to decide what, if any, charges to bring against a party and how to pursue each case. So let's say we have an officer that pulls somebody over because they believe they're driving drunk. And that person is taken to jail and they're booked in and they spend their time until they're able to sober up and be bailed out or bonded out. Then that case heads over to the district attorney's desk. Is that a fair assessment, Teresa?
Yes, yes, sort of, yes.
Well, if I'm wrong, tell me, because I'm often wrong. You can ask me.
Well, no, that's the way I think it's supposed to work. I think in Lawrence County, a lot of our officers have to go to the district attorney before they can arrest somebody. But I don't think that applies to maybe Murray and Giles and Wayne. But
let me say this before we go further. Anything I say does not represent the views of Teresa Brewer Campbell. It represents Chandler Anderson's views. I think it's mighty odd that this practice of calling the district attorney before you arrest somebody in Lawrence County is unique, given that the district attorney was terribly, terribly against Jimmy Brown and over the moon about making sure his friend was elected sheriff. I think at one point there was even a text exchange between he and a young man named Alex in which he says he was going to do all he could behind the scenes to make sure that his buddy was elected. And how ironic is it that now we get reports in that the police, instead of being allowed to do their job and arrest people based on the merits of what they find, are having to call the district attorney to get approval to arrest somebody in Lawrence County. It certainly does not seem to be the way things should go. I can say this for Bucky Rowland here in Murray County. I bet you Bucky's deputies are not having to call people or call the DA and ask permission to do their jobs. One of the things with this COVID that drove me crazy was that I had to call the State Department of Health and ask permission to test people with their testing supplies. And I thought, you know, I'm here seeing the patient. How in the world can you tell me they don't need a test when I'm the one sitting here looking at them and you're in an office somewhere? And to me, that's the same thing. You got a cop that's sitting there looking at somebody, and then you have to call a district attorney that's at home or at court or in his office on Facebook to make sure that it's okay to arrest this person. That something is wrong about that. But let's say that they do get arrested and it makes it to the district attorney's desk. All right. One of my best friends is JP Jones. You probably see JP on Facebook with me, Teresa. Let's say I'm the district attorney and JP's file lands on my desk. Because of prosecutorial discretion, I can look at that and say, you know what? I'm not going to prosecute this. Now, do I have to take that to a judge and get them to sign off on it and me say, hey, here's why I'm not going to prosecute this? Or can I just decide, oh, no, I'm not going to prosecute it because he's my buddy?
Well, I don't think you have to go to a judge and say, I'm not prosecuting this case because of such and such. I don't think that. Now, all right. I'm going to have a disclaimer here, too. I am a defense attorney. I'm not in prosecution. I don't prosecute people. I don't do any of that. I defend people. And I defend a lot of innocent people. And I have a lot of clients that may be victims in situations. And they're the ones that I'm getting a lot of information from, is these victims of certain crimes. So, yeah, you could, if you wanted to, as a prosecutor, not go after your friend or your buddy, or you could, it might be a total stranger, you know, and you might just decide, no, I don't want to prosecute that case.
Now, for the person that's the victim of that crime, that person's just out of luck. They're denied justice. because the prosecutor just decided, no, I don't want to do anything with this case. Let me give you an example of what happened to me. I was working at the walk-in clinic one day, and one of the girls comes to the back, to the office. It was kind of behind the wall they were in, or were in front of, and said, hey, you need to come up front. This guy is very upset, and you need to come up here. So I go up there, and this is before I carried. I went up there, and this man demanded that I write him Adderall right then. I said, well, brother, I'm not going to write you Adderall. That's not what we do here, and I'm sorry. You're just going to have to go somewhere else. He pulls out a gun. I get my staff into the chart room. The patients that are in the lobby move over to the left side, and this guy's standing there holding a gun ready to shoot me because I wouldn't write him Adderall. Well, the unique thing about prescriptions is that there's certain criteria you got to do, especially if it's a Schedule II drug like Adderall. You got to put your DEA number on it, and you got to sign it. So I thought, okay, how do I get out of this without me dying and my staff dying and patients getting hurt? And I will say the little girl named Heather Knox, who weighed about 100 pounds soaking wet, was behind me jumping around like some chimpanzee trying to defend me and trying to protect me. Meanwhile, the seven other staff members were hid in a closet. But I wrote him the prescription, and I didn't sign it. And he was so messed up that he took it and he left. And I got to give it to Jeremy Haywood, and he's chief detective now here in Columbia, and Brian Gray, who's in Mount Pleasant. They went and picked him up at CVS, and he went to jail. We got a court date, and we went, and I talked to the assistant district attorney. I won't mention his name. I think he's probably a good guy, probably overwhelmed. And then he forgot we were there. So when the guy went before the judge, nothing happened. He was let go because it appeared we didn't show up.
Oh, my.
Now, there's an example of the system being broken. But an even bigger example would be that case hitting the DA's desk and him going, oh, I don't like Chandler Anderson. And I know it's probably not a surprise to anyone listening. I'm not on Brent Cooper's Christmas card list. Or maybe it just got lost in the mail. I mean, things happen. But, by the way, appreciate you tuning in, Brent. He could decide that he doesn't want to prosecute me or prosecute the guy that pulled the gun on me. And then right. I'm left as a victim with no justice. So my question to you is this. What do we do about this situation? Because really, it has created a tyrannical system where you've got a tyrant, essentially, who can sit there and say, hey, I'm not prosecuting this case because the victim is somebody I don't like, or the victim is somebody that someone in my office doesn't care for. And he doesn't have to really ask anybody's permission to not prosecute that. Is there any recourse that you can think of, Teresa, if let's say that happens and, you know,
there
I
is
want
one.
To, I won't, what is the recourse?
Well, you can hire your own prosecutor. Like, or if you wanted to take a case to the grand jury yourself, you can actually go and talk to the grand jury, from what I understand. And you can also hire your own prosecutor. So if you had a little money.
They can be a regular attorney, right? They can be anybody out
right.
there as an attorney?
Yes.
Okay.
You probably would want somebody that has been in that role before. I mean, I would want somebody with a little experience at being a prosecutor, you know.
Like my friend Kevin Latta, who worked in the prosecutor's office, or maybe Chaz Mulder or somebody like that, who, you know, has been in that prosecutor role in the DA's office. You know, big shout out to Kevin Latta. I think Teresa is probably the same opinion as I am about nurse practitioners. There can be more than one good one. And, you know,
absolutely.
There can be more than one good lawyer. And I will say this, folks, Kevin Latta is a tremendous attorney. And if you ever need him, give him a call. He's going to take care of you. Mm-hmm. You can look him up in the phone book or online. If, I don't even know if phone books exist anymore. I'm telling my age there. But, you know, call
him. He is tremendous. But we have a lot of good attorneys in this area.
Well, and I'll tell you, you know, it drives me crazy, but that's his job, Bart Kelly. You know, call Bart Kelly. I mean, one way to win a case is piss off the guy you're unhappy with. You know, and I will say Bart's pretty damn good at that. So, you know, call Bart. He does a good job. You know, Jason Watley, even though we have some differences, he does a hell of a job. Give him a shout. There are lots of attorneys around here who do good work. And you know, so you could hire someone to actually take this case in front of the grand jury and try to get a true bill indictment or whatnot?
Well, yes. You could talk. No true bills when they do not indict somebody. So I just call it an indictment. I guess it's a true bill.
Gotcha. Well, and again, I'm not a lawyer by any means. I'm just trying to work through the things I've found in records and research and things. So what is the checks and balances with the district attorney? Let me throw this scenario at you. Let's say that I am a young woman who went to a bar, or better yet, let me do this scenario. I'm a woman sitting at home. Some meth head breaks into my house, beats the shit out of me, drags me down my yard, and my neighbor chases him off. Luckily, we're able to identify him and get him arrested. Well, let's say it hits the district attorney's desk, and the district attorney says, "Nah, I don't think I want to prosecute this. I'm not such a fan of the victim." Well, let's say I don't have the money for an attorney, because attorneys aren't cheap. I mean, you guys do a lot of work, and it's expensive. You know, I have an attorney that's a corporate attorney for us for Right Care to kind of protect us from, you know, people who want to throw a fit and we don't write opiates and things like that. That person, if they don't have the money for an attorney, they just, as my dad used to say, and pardon my language, they're just shit out of luck. Would you say?
Pretty much. You know, and I'm sure other smarter attorneys than I could think of something that might work. But really, if you can't afford your own prosecutor and the prosecution or the district attorney won't prosecute it, then you are pretty much don't have much recourse.
Now, folks, I'm going to tell you something. I'm going to read you something I found online. And it was in a discussion about this very thing. And a legal scholar said the heightened ethical standard for prosecutors is no more relevant than at the time that they decide to charge someone with a crime in a criminal case. And I would say the opposite of that is true, too. It's also no more relevant than if they decide to not charge someone. You really have to be ethical and above reproach there, because the whole point of being a prosecutor is that you're bound by a set of rules in which you want an outcome that is fair, and you want to conduct yourself in an ethical way. You want an outcome that is fair to the victim, but also that is equally fair to the person who committed the crime. You don't want to put somebody in the electric chair because they stole a pair of underwear from JCPenney. But you also want JCPenney to have some justice as well. So the problem, folks, that we have is we have found a section of our criminal justice system where there are no checks and balances, where a good old boy system can exist. The district attorney in this district and others has the ability to decide whether your case is valuable. He can decide that you get your day in court or you don't. Is that a fair statement, Teresa, that the district attorney, if you are a victim, can decide whether your case goes to court or not? He can decide to prosecute it, or he can decide not to.
I believe that's a fair statement.
Now, that's not
and,
what
you
our
know,
justice
and
system.
That does I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, it's just the overlap with this system. You know, I don't believe that that's what this justice system was designed to do. And I don't believe that that's what the American people want. And I don't think that's what our founding fathers want. I think that prosecutorial discretion was designed for an instance in which someone is broken in on and they shoot and kill somebody to defend themselves. The DA can say that was self-defense. I don't think I'm going to prosecute that. In the event that a police officer arrests the person and then facts come out later that show that this person was just defending their house. They were just protecting their family. The DA can say, I don't want to prosecute that. I don't want to put this person through that. You know, this is not what I'm here to do. I think it's going to be interesting because it just occurred to me, Teresa, that what I should do is file a TPRA request, a Tennessee Public Records Act request. And folks, if you're listening in, the Tennessee Public Records Act gives you access to anything that's government-owned or government-ran. Like, you can request things from the hospital because the hospital is owned by the county. You can request things from the Middle Tennessee Juvenile Detention Center because almost 100% of its funding comes from the government. You can request things about the district attorney. Now, he may get upset by that, and he may ask his friend, who is a state legislator, to introduce what was commonly called the Chandler-Anderson Bill, which restricted the amount of times you can make a request per year, and that the request, the person the information is requested from, they were going to be able to decide whether it was excessive or not. But nonetheless, you can request things from the DA's office. In fact, I requested Mr. Cooper's cell phone number and his the entirety of any pictures and text messages that existed on his cell phone. That was initially denied, but then the state attorney general said, state district attorney leader, I guess. What would you call that person? I guess it's the head district attorney for the state. Made him turn them over, and there were some interesting things on those messages, and I posted several of those for people to see. But I think, Teresa, a fair thing to do in light of this podcast would be request how many times in the last 12 months Mr. Cooper or his staff have invoked prosecutorial discretion to not prosecute someone. Do you think this happens frequently? Do you think the results I would get back would show that this is a frequent pattern? Or, I mean, if you just took a guess.
I don't think you'd be able to get those records. I don't think you'd be able to find out that information. Because, see, if a police officer's taking it to the DA and they say, no, we're not going to do that, there's no record of it, really. You know, there's no, how are you going to get that information? I would think that would be very difficult.
Well, and that is my point. There is no sunshine when Lady Justice is gone.
Well, you know, here's what I say about this. There is good things about prosecutorial discretion. You know, they can offer plea bargains. They can offer reduced and deferred sentences. And, you know, that helps keep the court system from being clogged up. So there is a positive part that they have, and that part helps my clients. And I'm very happy that they have, you know, the ability, well, I may nolly this charge if he'll plead to this one. You know, that's good because it keeps the system from clogging up the court system. But, you know, it is our right and it's our ability to vote and to elect different district attorneys or different people if we don't like how the district attorney is handling our cases. And,
correct,
you know, people talk and people are going to talk about what happened to them. You know, if they didn't get paid and their horse got stolen or their dog was killed, you know, by the neighbor, and they didn't get justice, they're going to talk. And that's how you get justice sometimes, is by electing a new person.
Well, and I'll tell you, you know, Mr. Cooper made a point to say that you couldn't record the police anymore. And I called him out on that and said, that's not true. And what you cited was not from our district, and it was from somewhere else. And even though you put this police cruiser that says Columbia DUI unit, which we all know that we don't have a DUI unit here in Columbia. It was Columbia, Missouri, I believe. You know, I've filed several complaints with a body called the Board of Professional Responsibility. And folks, if you have been the victim of a crime and the DA chose not to prosecute it because you're a relative of somebody or an ex-relative of somebody in his office and he doesn't like you because of that, or you were a political opponent of his, or you've been a critic of his, you can go to www.tbpr.org. And that is the equivalent of the Board of Nursing for me. It is the regulatory body for attorneys. You can file a complaint and be prepared to write it all out. It's something you have to write out and sign and send in, and they'll look into it. Now, the complaints that I have filed, they've looked into, and they've said, your best recourse for this is to make sure you get out and vote. And, folks, I don't know much about Mike Bottoms, the previous district attorney, but I will say this. I've lived in Maury County since 2002, and really before that, 1998 even, if I think about it. I had never heard of such misuse of indictments for personal gain and personal vendettas. I've not heard of such use of prosecutorial discretion as I have under the current regime of Brent Cooper. So, folks, his time is coming in 2022. That's when we get to choose another district attorney. So, folks, follow my Facebook page. I'm going to file a request and see how many cases were not taken to court due to prosecutorial discretion. And I'm going to make it clear, I'm not talking about ones, plea deals, and things like that. Which cases never were even brought to the courtroom because of prosecutorial discretion. Because, folks, I'll tell you, this is the same man that wanted to put a gag order on me because I walked out of the courtroom in the Lacey Kelly Darnell Wiggins matter, where Darnell violently murdered Lacey Kelly in front of her children, and I did a live stream about how Brent Cooper failed to ask the TBI to process all the evidence that had been sent to them from the murder scene. And I went live and just told people, this is the DA we have. And by that,
well,
that
was
on Monday. Go ahead, Teresa.
You know, the worst part of that was he left those two children that were his children, this Darnell, whatever his name was.
Wiggins.
His two kids there with their dead mother, and when the police got there, from what I understand, they were covered in blood. They were little tiny kids, covered in blood,
yeah,
probably trying to wake their mother.
Yeah, she actually survived to get in the ambulance. But, you know, this man, and my take was, the man's been in jail. He was in jail for almost 2 years before he went to trial. That gives him a reason to appeal. He didn't have his constitutional rights weren't being followed. And in the meantime, the family was sitting there having to see him eat cake and drink punch and graduate from Financial Peace University at the jail. And so I felt that was wrong. So as a citizen, I went online and did a live stream and talked about this. And that was on a Monday. And by that Friday, I had a knock at my door, and I was served to appear before Judge Hargrove for a gag order. The district attorney, folks, the same one that can decide whether you get justice or not, and the same one that can go tell a good story to a grand jury and get you indicted for something you didn't do, but he's a good storyteller. He, even through gritted teeth, he can produce a great story that would make a good TV show, if only it were true. That same guy wanted to get a gag order on me, a private citizen. Now, I will say this. That's where I first met Teresa Campbell. So I feel like God always has a plan, and his plan was for me to go through that to meet Teresa. And that's where we became friends and have been friends, and hopefully we'll be the friends the rest of our lives. I think Teresa's a wonderful human being. She's doing an adoption for one of my dear friends, and I think she's just tremendous. But think about that, folks. Our district attorney has indicted his political foes and indicted a sheriff and then said he wanted to make sure that he did everything behind the scenes for his buddy to win sheriff of Lawrence County. And guess what happened, folks? He won. He had a beef with a road superintendent in Wayne County, and he indicted him because this man, as I understand it, a patient with cancer, this little country bridge had washed out. The nurses were wading through water to get to his house to take care of him. The road superintendent was contacted, and he got some inmates, and they went and rebuilt this bridge. And what did he get as a thank you from Brent Cooper, who professes not to be part of the good old boy system? He got an indictment. That's what he ended up getting as a thank you, was an indictment from Brent Cooper and a bunch of money out of his pocket to an attorney, and took a plea deal to end it. And guess what? He won re-election overwhelmingly. The road superintendent did. Folks, there are situations all around us where we see injustice, and we are supposed to be able to rely on our criminal justice system, our district attorney, our sheriffs, and our law enforcement officers to protect us. And our law enforcement officers around here do a good job. They really do. And especially during this time of coronavirus, those guys, they're literally putting their life on the line like never before. And for them to arrest somebody and then have the DA decide, oh, no, I don't think I want to prosecute this. I know their mama, or I know so-and-so. That's a shame. And that's a shame to our men and women in uniform that go out there and bust their tail every single day to protect you and me. So, Teresa, I want to thank you for coming on board and talking about this with us. If you would, really quick, how can people get in touch with you? Let's say they're sitting back and they say, look, I need an attorney. I want an adoption. Or I need to just run something by somebody about a divorce. Or I need this or I need that. They need a good, honest attorney. How is it that they get in touch with Teresa Campbell?
Well, apparently my wonderful smart son put me on Google and has me on a website. I certainly didn't do it. He did it for me. And you can find me there, but you can also call me at 931-231-5857. And my email is teresacampbelllaw@gmail.com. And Teresa spelled T-E-R-E-S-A, Campbell, C-A-M-P-B-E-L-L-L-A-W@gmail.com. Those are the two ways. Now, normally you can text me, and the only way to get in touch with me basically is texting because I'm always in court. But because of this horrid virus, I am able to take phone calls right now.
Well, there you go, folks. It's a great way to get in touch with Teresa. She'll do a good job for you. I've got friends that have used Teresa, and she is tremendous. And, folks, I want you to think about the reason we did this is because there's a flaw in our system. And that's, we have a tyrannical person who can decide whether you get justice or not. And we got to get that changed because people deserve their day in court if you're a victim. And to be for somebody's victim rights, it's all, Mr. Cooper always brags about how he's an advocate for victims. one of the texts that I saw on his phone, and Teresa, I'm gonna let you go here. Just keep listening. I'm going to bring somebody else on real quick. We got 4 minutes left. Thank you again for coming
on. Okay.
We appreciate you, and we love you, and thanks for all you do for everybody in that area.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. I'm going to bring on J.P. Jones here. J.P., can you hear me?
I can hear you fine, Chandler. How is everybody doing tonight? Taylor Unleashed has been wild. A lot of informative information that you and her provided for a lot of the people there in Maury County. I just hope people are paying attention.
Well, I just want to say this. We have about 75 listeners still on right now, but we only have about 4 minutes left because, as usual, like when you and I did the radio broadcast for wrestling, I chose the wrong time. I only chose 60 minutes instead of 90. But remember when I got all the screenshots from Brent Cooper's phone?
Well, yes, I remember, and I do remember. It seemed like there were some things missing, but that's neither here nor there. But, yes, I remember.
Mr. Cooper proclaims to be a victim's advocate. If you notice, he does the victim's march every year and all this other. One of those texts, ironically, was about a woman who was a victim. And he texted somebody and said, "She won't quit calling my phone. Can you please go to her house and find out what she wants?" Does it sound like somebody that's concerned about a woman that's being abused?
Seemed like they were more concerned about their phone getting phone calls, I guess.
You know, I have had a rough couple of weeks with this COVID. My phone's blown up, and there may be some times that I'm not warm and fuzzy. But if I'm the damn district attorney, my job is to make sure people are safe and to make sure that they get justice because they deserve it. And that was one of the screenshots, folks, was that he was irritated that a victim was contacting him. So I want to say this. I did this show because I want people to know there's one section of the criminal justice system that can do what they want, and it's unchecked. There's nothing we can do about it other than vote him out. And as we head toward 2022, I want everybody to keep this in mind. Your child could be attacked, doing nothing, could be attacked, beaten, and bludgeoned. And Brent Cooper could be friends with the dad of the person that did it, and your child would never get a day in court to see justice. Your mother do what?
I was going to say, we've seen he's very selective in who he decides to prosecute and who he decides to not prosecute. And a lot of these things seem to be politically motivated when it comes to getting his friends elected. So let's say, I don't know, maybe he doesn't believe in the political party and he decides not to prosecute you. So it's very sad situation, Chandler.
Well, I will say this, folks. If you believe in truth, justice, and the American way, you need to vote for somebody other than Brent Cooper in 2022, because Brent Cooper has stated that he will do, or he's not stated, he's shown it, that he will indict his political enemies. He will not prosecute his friends. There was a cop in Giles County who was on Grindr, and I'll end with this, on Grindr talking to an underage child, and Mr. Cooper never prosecuted that person, even though that underage child was a detective for the Giles County Sheriff's Department. And folks, if you think that's justice and you think that's making our area safer in the 22nd Judicial District, I'll end with a quote from one of my favorite judges. General Cooper, the 22nd Judicial District used to be honorable. Used to be, folks. Y'all have a good night, and thanks for listening in. Join us next week as we talk to Corey Smith about all the happenings in the big town of Petersburg.
Are you ready for the truth? The whole truth and nothing but the truth? It's time now for Chandler Unleashed.